Good morning again, brethren and sisters, and also to those that might be listening online or via the telephone. It is a beautiful day today, and it's a privilege that we can be here. My name is Brother Joe Clifton, and I will be your chairman this morning. Brother Sebastian Pitcher will provide us with the words of exhortation, and he's looking at the final chapter of Hebrews, which is today's daily reading. Hebrews is one of my favourite books, and it's great that Sebastian is actually picking it up for the exhortation today. And I'd just like to share with you a few words from the start of chapter 12 from the NIV, which was the reading yesterday. It says there, "We are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. Let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, that you will not grow weary and lose heart." As mentioned earlier, our brother Sebastian will be exhorting us from Hebrews around the theme, "Let brotherly love continue." And he's asked as an introduction to his exhortation that we read from Hebrews 13, which is the daily reading from today. And we'll now call forward our brother Sebastian to lead us in the words of exhortation around the theme, "Let brotherly love continue." Thanks, Sebastian.
As you walk through the streets of your town, you hear some hurried whispers. "She's sick. It looks bad. Will she be okay? She might be dying. This must be such a hard time for their family. Is there anything that we can do to help?" So you join the others in heading to the house to see if there's anything you can do, or at least to give your support and some condolences. When you arrive, things seem grim. There are a lot of people there. Some have food that they've brought for the family. Others with other gifts. Some are just helping out around the place, or just offering some kind words. Or maybe some are just there to show solidarity in this time of trial. Of course, this is a very hard time for this household, but you do feel a little better about it because you can see that you and others are there to give to them their well-needed support in their time of distress, and if needed, to mourn with them in their time of mourning. But did you notice, as you went past, one poor woman in the streets, with little money left to afford even the barest necessities for living, and in constant pain from her ongoing medical condition? She's easy to miss. Maybe people have stopped noticing since she's been there for almost 12 years now. Well, Christ noticed her, and she was healed, as was the little girl when Christ finally arrived and resurrected her, restoring her to her family. Good morning, my dearly beloved brothers, sisters, and young people. Maybe you might recognise that story. It's in our Bibles in Mark chapter 5, and it gives us something to think about. The story of Jairus' daughter and the woman with the issue of blood. So we think that when some big or dramatic event happens, when we see a high-profile emergency, I think we're all pretty good at doing something to help, to assist, to show love. But what many people, myself included, are not quite as good at are seeing the everyday needs. Seeing the ongoing help, the things that may not be announced, things that may be a bit more private or personal, but are just as necessary and equally in need of help. Comparatively, we might be not quite as good at seeing and helping with those sort of things. But our God, of course, sees everything. He knows the needs of all people, and he provides for all of creation, even those that turn their backs on him. As Christ says to us in Matthew chapter 5, verse 45, "That ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven, for he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and on the unjust. So we see that our Father cares and provides for all. And Christ also paid attention and went out of his way to give help to all sorts of people that needed him. So what about us? Do we do the same? Do we not only help with the causes that are shown to us, but do we look for any way that we might be needed and to see opportunities that we might give assistance? So now we come to the start of our morning's reading. Let brotherly love continue. That's how verse 1 reads in the King James Version. Some other versions put it a little more emphatically. For example, brotherly love must continue. And this reminds us of the new commandment that Christ gave at the Last Supper, recorded in John 13, verse 34, the one from our meditation hymn that we considered this morning. The new commandment to love one another. So we are commanded to love each other. So this isn't just a feeling of affection and companionship, because that isn't the kind of thing that you would be commanded. This is agape love, the love that is giving of yourselves to the benefit of others, putting others' needs first. And we'll look at some examples of this that come out from considering this chapter. And as we continue on in this chapter this morning, I found verse 2 to be really interesting. Do not neglect hospitality, because through it some have entertained angels without knowing it. There are a few examples of this that we read in the scripture. The first and probably most memorable is that of Abraham, recorded in Genesis chapter 18. So let's turn there now. Genesis chapter 18, and we'll be commencing at verse 1. And the Lord appeared unto Abraham in the plains of Mamre, as he sat in the tent door in the heat of the day. And he lifted up his eyes and looked, and lo, three men stood by him. And when he saw them, he ran to meet them from the tent door, and bowed himself toward the ground and said, My Lord, if now I have found favour in thy sight, pass not away, I pray thee, from thy servant. Let a little water, I pray you, be fetched, and wash your feet, and rest yourselves under the tree. I'll fetch a morsel of bread, and comfort ye your hearts. After that ye may pass on. For therefore you come to your servant. And they said, So do as thou hast said. Abraham didn't know that there was anything special about these travellers. It wasn't until after he'd made them comfortable and fed them, ate, that they revealed that they had a message for him, and that it was a message from Yahweh. We have no record of them speaking until verse 9, and so this shows that Abraham was genuinely generous and hospitable to anyone he met travelling by. This was his character. And so the special thing about this incident isn't Abraham's actions, because while they are commendable and something we should aspire to, that was just normal for him. The thing that was different and special, the reason that this in particular is recorded, is because this time the recipients were special. Angelic messengers from God telling him about the promised seed. And so we can think, how many times would there have been in the life of Abraham where he would have met strangers and invited them in, and it isn't recorded because they were just ordinary travellers. And our very next example is in the very next chapter. If you turn the page, you'll notice that it's with two of the very same angels. After speaking with Abraham, they continued on their journey towards Sodom, where they were greeted by Lot, who took them into his house. So we'll read the first three verses of Genesis 19 also. And there came two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. And Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground, and he said, Behold now, my lords, turn in, I pray you, into your servant's house, and tarry all night, and wash your feet. And ye shall rise up early, and go on your ways. And they said, Nay, we will abide in the street all night. And he pressed upon them greatly, and they turned in unto him, and entered into his house, and he made them a feast, and did bake unleavened bread, and they did eat. So Lot didn't know that these were special angelic visitors. They were just strangers who'd come to this admittedly unsavoury city. And so he offered them a place to stay and provided them with a meal and offered to wash their feet, just as Abraham did. He would even protect his guests later in this chapter at the expense of his own family. Yes, Lot was far from in an ideal situation. He was living somewhere that he should have been staying away from, and there were evidently problems with his family. But he still had the same generous and hospitable spirit of his uncle Abraham. It wasn't until after his confrontation with the men of Sodom, after he'd provided all this for his guests, that they revealed that they'd been sent by God to destroy that wicked city. So again we see, however problematic other parts of Lot's life may have been, he had this commendable spirit that he would extend to strangers coming through his gate, and that he would protect them from the horrible things that he saw happening around him in Sodom. And so maybe the author here in Hebrews was also thinking about Gideon, who in Judges chapter 6 verse 19 brought food to the angel who called him to save Israel. Gideon had been told that this was an angel from God, but he wasn't completely sure. And the main reason that I bring up this example is because at the time of Gideon, we know that food was scarce for the Israelites. Gideon was threshing wheat in a wine press, a suboptimal location for the task that he was undertaking. But he did so to hide it from the Midianite invaders. They were forced to these measures because of their great lack. In verse 6 of Judges 6, we're told that Israel was greatly impoverished because of the Midianites. And so even though Gideon had a pretty good idea that this was an angel, it still shows a generous attitude to be hospitable with food at a time such as this. The final biblical example I could find of people entertaining angels unawares is a bit of an obscure one. It's that of Manoah, Samson's father. It seems in the record that Manoah did understand that the person he was speaking to was a messenger from God, since Manoah had prayed for him to come and speak with them after the angel had first appeared to his wife. And he took the message very seriously. But we are told specifically in Judges chapter 13, verse 16, that he knew not that he was an angel of the Lord. And Manoah asked him to stay and offered him a meal. So, as I said, these are the only examples, as far as I could find, that are recorded of this happening, that the author in Hebrews may have been thinking of when they penned these words. But maybe when they said, without knowing it, they could be indicating a possibility that there could be others that offered and gave hospitality to angels and didn't realise, neither before or after. And also we know that the word angel is literally the word for a messenger. So really this verse could be applied more broadly to include the mortal messengers of God. I was only going to give one example of this because it could be applied to so many. But let's think about the widow of Zarephath. She was asked by Elijah for a little cake of bread when she was preparing the final meal for herself and her son, seeing as they didn't have enough to continue living on. And yes, Elijah did tell her that God had sent him, that God wouldn't let the flour and oil fail. But she was a Zidonian. She may not have understood what that really meant, that Elijah was a messenger of the Most High God. But still, she acquiesced into giving him food and lodging. Elijah was a prophet, indisputably a messenger sent by God. But in a way, we are all messengers, showing others by our conversations and our actions the word of God. And just one more quick example that wasn't in my notes, but it ties in really well to the commandment that our brother Zach read this morning. We can consider how Ananias and Barnabas, these brothers, were welcoming and brotherly to Saul when Saul had been not just a stranger, but an enemy of the ecclesia. But he was chosen by God, and these men extended kindness to him when many in the ecclesia were keeping their distance. And so this really is loving your enemies and showing hospitality to strangers. And I'm sure there are so many other examples of those that have offered hospitality to any people sent by God or called by God, with varying degrees of awareness of whom they were doing it for. But now I just want to turn and think about us here at Hyde Park. This attitude of hospitality is captured in part of our purpose statement above me on the wall there. Worshipping God, welcoming the faithful, witnessing to the world. I obviously don't know how well each of you personally go with acting upon this in your individual lives, but as an ecclesia, I think we do rather well at being welcoming, warm and hospitable, showing brotherly love, being a bright and warm witness to those around us. There's one specific example I'd like to highlight from our history here at Hyde Park. Not all of you here may have met him, but many of us would remember our dear brother Jay from Korea. He saw our sign. He decided to stick around for the start of one of our Bible classes and was given a very warm welcome by one of our lovely hospitable sisters. He'd come to Australia initially not knowing very much English, not really knowing many people. But at Hyde Park, he was made to feel very welcome. A few members in particular really took him under their wing, and he became a regular smiling face at all of our events. He was even baptised here in this hall before having to return to Korea. But when we first met him, none of us knew that he'd been chosen by God. We showed him hospitality, hopeful but uncertain of what God had in store for him and for us. It turned out in the end that he was one of God's people, and now he can be a messenger for God in his life. So we could say in a way that we showed hospitality to an angel in potentia. Although at the time, he may have been considered a stranger. So what's the point of all this? Is it some sort of hedging our bets type of situation, where we're being kind and hospitable to others merely because there's a chance they might be someone special, or so our efforts might be paid off or worth it in that sense? Well, of course not. We're supposed to be showing love and kindness as part of our character. And we are being reminded in Hebrews that we might never know who it might be to whom we're showing this love. But as we saw earlier, we're commanded to show this love anyway. It's pointed out for us in Matthew 25 that it isn't always about who we're literally showing this love and kindness to, because Christ can count it as actions towards himself. So let's turn there now to Matthew chapter 25. And I'll read verses 33 to 40. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand and the goats on his left. Then shall the king say to them on his right hand, Come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was an hungered, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. And in prison, and you came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee a hungered, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger, and took thee in, or naked, and clothed thee? When saw we thee sick or in prison and came unto thee? The king shall answer and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it to one of the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me. So we see here that Christ counts these acts of kindness and love, this provision of the needs of food and drink, this hospitality to strangers, this care, this compassion, this generosity that we do towards one another as though we were doing them to him. The people doing these things didn't realise they were doing them to Christ. As they said, when did we do all this? Maybe they didn't even really think about the fact that they were doing it at all, because that's just the kind of people that they are, characterised by showing this kind of love to others. They don't stop to think about it. It isn't a special occasion or an event for them to celebrate. Every day, this is just how they act towards others. And this is the sort of character that God and Christ want to see in the kingdom, because this is their character. And when they see in us the sort of love that they show, they want us to be a part of that kingdom, when all the earth will be filled with the people that reflect that glorious character. For that's God's purpose with the earth, to fill it with people that want to be like him, reflecting his glory. And remember, during the early part of my exhort, I was talking about the new commandment that we love one another. And some of you may have noticed that at that time I didn't finish the quote. I left off the "as I have loved you." That's because I'd left that bit for now. Christ gave to us the example to follow, the greatest love to which we are to respond by showing that love to others. And I really, really like the way that John expounds on this point in his letters. So turn with me to the 1st of John, chapter 4. And we're going to look at the section from verse 7 onwards. 1st of John 4, verses 7 to 10. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God. And everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God. He that loveth not knoweth not God, for God is love. And in this was manifested the love of God towards us, because that God sent his only begotten Son into the world that we might live through him. Herein is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son to be the propitiation for our sins. So John here first establishes love as being the character of God. God is love, and if we don't understand how to show love, we don't understand the first part of God's character. And we're given the perfect example of love in the giving of Christ to redeem us. So now we'll continue with verses 11. And then we'll jump down to verses 19 to 21. Beloved, if God so loved us, we ought also to love one another. Then from verse 19, we love him because he first loved us. If a man say, I love God, and hateth his brother, he is a liar. For he that loveth not his brother, whom he hath seen, how can he love God, whom he hath not seen? This commandment have we from him, that he who loveth God love his brother also. So we're not hedging our bets, just in case our actions are towards an angel or potentially one of God's chosen. We don't show love just because we want to be counted among those to enter the kingdom, or because it might be counted as towards Christ. Yes, they are all motivators, but the primary and greatest motivation to show this love is in response and recognition of the love that we have been shown. It should be out of gratitude of all that God and Christ have done for us. It should be because we love them, because of the love that they showed for us. And if we love them, we should want to be like them and to please them in helping to spread that love, to show that same love to others, reflecting that character as it has been shown towards us. So now let's return to our reading in Hebrews chapter 13. And while you're turning there, let me tell you about a philosophy that's very common in our world today. And you've probably heard people say it before. I know I certainly have, even this week. It's the idea of look out for yourself first. It's not always in those exact words, but the sentiment is the same. If you don't look out for yourself, aka number one, no one else will. People are happy to help others as long as they're in a stable position first, if it isn't going to put them out of their comfort zone. They say, don't put yourself out for other people. Don't overextend yourself to help others. Otherwise, you might just end up being an unwanted burden yourself. So this is the world's mantra, but it's the complete opposite to the attitude and the character of Christ. If we look at our reading, verse 3 tells us to remember and help others as if we were suffering the same things they were dealing with, to show that great empathy and compassion that Christ did show. And verse 6 reminds us that we can be confident in the love, the strength, the support and the salvation we have through Christ. We need not worry, because we remember Christ has suffered all things and was tempted in all points the same as us. He's gone through all of this, and we need to feel that compassion towards others, because we can have confidence that we have Christ to lean back on. And so we don't need to worry. So let's particularly read verses 10 to 14 of our reading this morning. We have an altar whereof they have no right to eat which serve the tabernacle. For the bodies of those beasts, whose blood is brought into the sanctuary by the high priest for sin, are burned without the camp. Wherefore Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, sanctified without the gate. Let us go forth therefore unto him without the camp, bearing his reproach. For we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come. Individuals in this world don't like to look outside of themselves or outside of their circles. But Christ suffered outside the camp, as the author here puts it. So we also are encouraged to step outside of ourselves and to follow his example. As we saw in our readings yesterday, and as Joe read out as we began this morning, Christ despised the shame of the cross, rather looking forward to the joy that was before him. And we also should not hesitate to show the love of Christ to others, whatever reproach we might anticipate. What should we care about the status that we have in this world? We're not living for these things, but we're living for the world, the promised kingdom that is to come. So what was it? What was this joy that Christ was looking forward to? Well, obviously it was the kingdom. But from context, with the cloud of witnesses being mentioned, we can infer that it wasn't just Christ being there, but he wanted to be there with his disciples, with all of those faithful down throughout time. And so, in closing this morning, let's consider the hospitality and the love of Christ. I won't get you to turn all these passages up, because we're going to be jumping around between different records of the Gospels a fair bit. So we're going to start in the Gospel of John, verses 1 to 5, chapter 13, verses 1 to 5. But now, before the feast of Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come, that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. And supper being ended, the devil having now put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, that he was come from God and went to God, he riseth from supper, laid aside his garments, and took a towel, and girded himself. After that he poureth water into a basin, and began to wash the disciples' feet, and to wipe them with the towel wherewith he was girded. What a beautiful act of love and humility. He didn't care about the shame of this for his position. He didn't think twice about putting himself out to serve others. He knew what he'd have to go through that night. He knew what was in store. But still he showed great love for his disciples by washing their feet. and giving them this example of love and service, the sort of hospitality that they should be showing each other. Even though he was about to suffer an excruciating death and could have been excused for wanting to enjoy his last moments, even though there was one there that Jesus knew was the one that would betray him, still he served and treated them all equally. Could we have ever done that in his position? What a master we have to follow. But our consideration of Christ's hospitality doesn't stop there. In Luke chapter 22, verses 14 to 16, it's recorded, "And when the hour was come, he sat down, and the 12 apostles with him. And he said unto them, With desire I have desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. For I say unto you, I will not any more eat thereof until it be fulfilled in the kingdom of God." Christ strongly desired to have this Passover meal with his disciples. He had prepared everything for them. And in the previous few verses, it's recorded that he'd even organized a place in this packed city for them to have their meal together. But notice at the end of that section that I read, Christ is looking forward to the kingdom. And that's brought out even more strongly in Matthew's record. Matthew 26 and verse 29. "But I say unto you, I will not drink henceforth of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." Christ is looking forward to sharing this meal that we have before us with all of his disciples, with all of us, when he returns and the kingdom is established. Later that same night, Christ was taken. He was put through a sham of a trial, scourged, mocked, and crucified. He bore all this, did all this, and he died for us. And he was raised again, that we might all have hope of living in that kingdom. That kingdom that he wants to share with us. By going through all this, he was giving us an invitation. An invitation that we've received to partake in what is referred to as the marriage supper of the Lamb. And this hope is the hospitality and the love that Christ showed to us. We've each received our invitations to that marriage feast that is to come. So how is it that we choose to respond to that invitation?